biblical manhood. It would be a very rare thing, indeed, for me to go back to the theater. I spent too much of my life going to it. I have no idea what's out there now, but I'm sure it can't be better than the things I just described to you. We've got a society, in other words, that looks at adultery, in many ways at least, in kind of an apathetic way. And you can look in books of psychology and women's magazines circulating right now, and they may even tell you that adultery is a good thing. They'll tell you that it will make you a better lover. It will help you with your midlife crisis. It'll bring joy into your life. It'll bring excitement back into your marriage. You want to help your marriage? Go find someone outside of your marriage, and that'll reinvigorate your present marriage. Contraceptives and operations have made it more appealing as well, because you can avoid the consequences. The seventh commandment, Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, is, of course, you shall not commit adultery. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10 tells us that adulterers will not inherit the kingdom of God. Hebrews 13, verse 4 says, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but what? Whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. In a group as big as we've got right now, and I don't know your personal story, so I can say this without you feeling like I'm pointing it at you in any way, shape, or form. But in a group this big, I'd say there's a very good chance that someone in this room has either been affected by adultery in their own marriage, has maybe been tempted to engage in adultery, or is maybe even toying with the idea right now. And if you're in that position, if you're toying with the idea, and maybe there's no one, I hope there's not, but if you're toying with the idea, I'd like to begin tonight by just asking you to consider some consequences. Jesus told us to count the cost before we commit to him, and we need to count the cost before we commit to any sin. Sooner or later, we all sit down to a banquet of consequences. That's what Robert Louis Stevenson said. What are the consequences of this sin? Well, for example, consider that you are only thinking of the moment if you are toying with the idea. Those who engage in adultery not only end up lying with someone, but they lie to other people. 70 to 80% of the time, extramarital affairs last 6 months to a year. Most are not one-time instances. To your sin of infidelity, you will likely end up adding the sin of persistent lying to your innocent spouse and others to hide what you're doing. And when your spouse finds out, yes, you may have a lot of anger and bitterness and resentment built up towards that individual, but do you really want to make his or her life as miserable as you will when they find out? Alan Cole, in his article, The Pain of Adultery, wrote what it was like when he learned that his spouse had been unfaithful to him. He said, "I never really grasped the ravaging effects of adultery until it happened to me. The initial shock is unavoidable when the jilted spouse learns of the adultery. This can't be real. It's like having a horrible nightmare from which you cannot escape. The thought, this can't be happening to me, replays itself over and over again in your mind. The only interruption is the anger that must be battled to maintain one's sanity. Adultery leaves the innocent spouse with feelings of depression, guilt, and humiliation." He goes on to enumerate a number of other things. He says, "It's incredible how lonely and empty the discarded spouse feels. You feel as if there's no life left in you. Your heart is broken, your dreams are shattered, and you don't want to go through another day. If you engage in the sin of adultery, more likely than not, your marriage will dissolve. 65% of the time, adultery results in divorce. The family unit that you have right now may forever be a thing of the past. Your hopes, your plans, your dreams, all those family vacations, all those future pictures will all be gone because of a moment of folly or 6 months of folly. Your children will suffer if there's a divorce. Your young children will not understand. Your older ones will be angry and disappointed, and they may be sent into a tailspin of destructive behavior as they mimic your behavior. Your boys may grow up hating you, at least not respecting you. Your young girls may go looking for love in all the wrong places. After all, that's what my dad or mom did. Divorce in family influences the likelihood of adult children to consider divorce, and adulterous behavior by parents does in fact seem to beget similar behavior by their offspring. There will be financial trouble. 25 to 40% of spouses having affairs bring financial ruin to their marital home. 25 to 40% bring financial ruin There will be a dividing of the family's assets. You will lose what you've worked so hard for. And if you are the man, there's a good chance you will lose everything. He or she may come after you for nearly everything. There will be child support you will have to pay. You will carry a stigma for the rest of your life. Public sentiment against adultery is actually very strong. Though adultery is, we have a more apathetic view than we used to, still 8 out of 10 Americans say they disapprove of it. You will have that hanging over your head. You will lose the trust of some of your friends. You will lose other friends altogether. Your credibility as a Christian will be shot. What did Jesus say? Matthew 5:13, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? He's talking about your ability to affect the lives of others in the name of Jesus. Once your hypocrisy becomes known, you have no more impact, no more positive impact. What's more, not only will they think ill of you, but they may think ill of your God. Romans 2:24, the scripture said, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. That was you Jews. Because you claim to be servants of God, and yet you live this life contrary to the will of God, not only do people speak ill of you, but they speak ill of your God. Do you want to be the reason for someone's blasphemy? That stigma, that past, will keep you from ever serving probably as an elder, as a deacon, as an evangelist, or at least being as effective in those roles as you might have been. The reputation of your family will suffer. As I have gotten older, and I know I'm no old man river, but as I have gotten older, I have come to see that you cannot engage in any sin that does not affect others. You say, oh, no, that's not true, John. See, I've got this little secret sin. It's only affecting me. It's not hurting anybody else. Oh, yes, it is. Because, see, it's affecting your purity. It's affecting your conscience. It's affecting who you are, and you are in turn not the influence in others' lives that you would be otherwise. It's affecting others, whether you see it or not. Your children may have that hanging over their heads for the rest of their lives, at least in some circles. A disease can result. Unwanted children may be produced. You'll be sinning against your own body, 1 Corinthians 6:18 says. You'll make yourself an enemy of God, James chapter 4, verse 4. You'll peril your eternity. And let me ask you this. The soul of the one you wish to sin with, will you tell her you love her as you lead her down a highway to hell? There's a lot of consequences to be considered when contemplating the sin, and we're really just scratching the surface. If I am convinced of what adultery will do to me and my family, I will watch my wandering eyes, I will guard my thought life, and I will avoid any situation that will put me in temptation's way. I didn't come here tonight to talk all night about the consequences of adultery, but that lays the groundwork, I hope. Because the template, if you will, in the scripture for being faithful to God and being faithful to your spouse is twofold. Flee and seek. That's what Paul told Timothy to do. 1 Timothy 6:11, but you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee also youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Flee temptation and pursue those things which will keep you from it. That is, of course, a positive relationship with the one you've committed your life to. Did you have any idea what you were promising to when you said, I do? I don't think most of us probably did. You meant it, but you didn't know all that was coming. To keep that promise, what will it take? Well, flee close relationships with those of the opposite sex. Oh, that sounds awfully old-fashioned, John. Yeah, and the old-fashioned way worked, at least on this particular point. The development of affairs is detailed by a Dr. Willard F. Harley in his book, His Needs, Her Needs. He writes that when an affair starts, it usually begins as a friendship. There's self-disclosure. You share problems with the other person. They reciprocate. Usually you have to see this person quite often. 50 to 75% of extramarital affairs take place with someone from the workplace. As the friendship deepens, you start giving each other encouragement, and this positive feedback starts acting as this powerful magnet, and that draws the two together. Very often, The friendship that grows into an affair, and this is an important point, very often, the friendship that grows into an affair is not based on physical attraction. The individual may be less attractive than the person's spouse. That if the affair, even for men, is very emotionally based. That's an important point. It's not so much about the appearance as it is about the relationship. A couple of years ago, and Pat responded to this on Facebook when I threw it out there. I don't know if she remembers this or not, but a couple of years ago, I was wanting some sisters' input on what could be done to avoid temptation and to help with purity and faithfulness to the spouse. And these are written by women of various ages, members of the church. So this is not the male perspective. One sister, the age of 35, writes, "A woman should never confide in another man, have a close relationship with another man, or in any other way join herself emotionally to any man but her husband. Women feel drawn to men who seem to understand them, who sympathize with their pain, who act as their protector." This goes the other way too. Men should refrain from confiding in another woman if for no other reason his emotional vulnerability may be appealing to her. Pat wrote, and I hope she doesn't mind me quoting her by name. I should have asked. "I think most people have the ability to recognize the moment someone says something to you that seems a little inappropriate, or gives you a look that may seem a little inappropriate for the relationship you are supposed to have with that person. That is the time the Lord is giving you the opportunity to flee temptation, walk away. Relationships usually begin with a conversation of shared feelings." Another sister, about age of 40 now, writes, "Be careful not to form friendships with men, as all too often that evolves into more than friendship. Never, ever complain about your husband to another man." That goes both ways. "As that forms a bond, and you might start seeing the other man as more understanding, caring, etc., than your husband. Don't encourage flirtations, even though it's flattering." Again, she writes, it goes both ways. Now, of course, all these things are true for men. But I thought it was interesting to have a woman and some mature woman's perspective on that. 10 to 20% of extramarital affairs begin as internet relationships in chat rooms or at game websites. So relationship building is not limited to physical contact. Flee deep personal relationships with someone of the opposite gender who is not your spouse. Flee misleading and immoral media. TV, movies, books, newspapers, magazines, video games, internet, etc., that communicate ideas that would lead you to view your spouse in a way that is not fair to him or her and not right. I had a man come to my door a number of years ago, and I felt for him because he was working a sales job. He's trying to pay his bills. But he came to my door selling the Kansas City Star. And I told him I wasn't interested. Now, everyone has to make their own decision, but this is the decision our family has made. And I said I wasn't interested. You know, of course he wants to know why. And I just simply said to him, I said, "A lot of what is in that newspaper is nothing but soft porn." This man was older than me, and he got very silent. And I think I sensed a little bit of shame. He knew I was right, and that was the end of the conversation. What sort of things do you watch? Yes, there are fine things on television. Yes, you can find movies probably that are acceptable. But a lot of what is being painted on the big screen and painted in magazines and a whole bunch of other things that, if we're not careful, we're digesting, are painting very unrealistic pictures of what the opposite sex is, of what beauty is, of what charm is, whatever it be. And what's it do? It starts filling my mind with those ideas and expectations, and before you know it, and this really happens, I start seeing the opposite gender in a way that, again, is not right. It's not fair to them. One sister wrote this: "It is essential for all Christians to be careful what TV shows, movies, and music videos they watch and what they read. The wrong input in our brain will more than likely yield the wrong output. Women and men both have issues with false expectations of marriage. Books can magnify this for women. Something I've noticed in books is the glamorization of losing your feelings for someone, just like it's a natural phenomenon that you have no control over, being helplessly drug around by your emotions, following your heart, when really all you're following is nothing but sinful lust. The idea that when you've lost those feelings, they're not worth rebuilding, and you must chase a new and more exciting pursuit. Just a lot of emphasis on the emotional and sexual aspects of attraction without the substance of loving someone for their virtue, righteousness, and as a good helpmeet. And there's more I could read here. I've been lecturing the whole time, and I want to make a point to open the floor if anyone has any comments or questions. But I want to read one more quote to you, and then if you have anything to say, please do. One other sister wrote, "I think we ladies should be careful both with what we read and what we watch, as a romanticized version of marriage and or love could lead to discontentment and make one start searching for that elusive Hollywood feeling." Is there something to this, in your opinion? And I'd like your opinion. Is there something to the idea that what we read and what we watch may in fact affect how we view our spouse, affect how we view the opposite sex, and lead us to create expectations that cannot realistically be met? Or am I all washed up? And if you think I am, please feel free to say so, Randy. Appreciate that. I agree with that. I mean, the marketer's job is to make you discontent with what you have. That's his or her job. And any other thoughts? Let me ask you this, and you don't have to give me your personal opinion about your personal life. Do we take this as seriously as we ought? I mean, I'll give you my opinion. You know, I get the opportunity to visit brethren's homes as I travel throughout the brotherhood. That's a tremendous blessing. Once in a while, though, I'm put in a bedroom or a living room, and I see all their movies, and I think to myself, really? Really? I know the effect that these things can have on me. Is it just me? I'll leave it there. Flee deep relationships with the opposite gender. Flee misleading and immoral media. Flee places of ill repute. And I hope I'm not sounding like I'm just beating people over the head here, but I think most of the people in this room, probably what I'm about to say is not an issue, but flee places of ill repute. Well, what are you talking about, John? I'm talking about places like public pools, public beaches, etc. I think this is probably primarily an issue for men, but I think it's an issue. I've had occasion where I hear about a brother or young men in the church going and hanging out at the public pool. When miniskirts were introduced into Tokyo, Japan, the assault rate jumped 80% in 6 months. Now, those men are guilty for the decisions they made, but there's more than just correlation there. There's a connection. During the hijacking of the Santa Maria in 1967, the women on board were concerned that the rebels might have designs on them, so the women intentionally decided to stop going into the pool, stop wearing shorts, stop wearing halter tops, and they did things, of course, to conceal what they knew would draw attention to them. That's interesting to me. They knew it was drawing attention to them before, but that was attention that they wanted. There is a link between sexual immorality and increasing immodesty, and places like the beach, and I love the beach. I love the beach. I mean, it's awesome to go and sit on the white sands of the Gulf of Mexico and see those clear waves roll in. It's beautiful. Our family makes a point to, when we go, to find a place. State parks are pretty good for this, where there's hardly anybody around. so we can kind of have the beach to ourselves. It takes work, and the beach is maybe not quite as exciting as the others, but it gives us a place where we can enjoy ourselves and not be distracted. I have to admit, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm admitting more about myself than, but if a man tells me that he can go to a place like a pool or like a public beach where there are scantily clad women everywhere, and he tells me he can go to a place like that and not have a very difficult time keeping his heart and mind pure, he's either lying to himself, lying to me, or he's got something wrong with it. I don't know if there is a fourth option. Maybe it's possible to reach a place in your spiritual growth that you suddenly kind of become impervious to that on some level. I doubt it, but maybe. So I'll hold that out as a possible fourth. But I'm just very skeptical of it. These places are full of naked flesh, illicit stimulation, and they don't do a marriage good. And they don't do a man or a woman good. Which brings me to another point, which is probably the most relevant of everything I've said tonight. Matthew 5:28 says, "Whoever looks upon a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." I was teaching at a men's day about 2 years ago, and I talked about the issue of pornography. And I had a man come up to me who was in his 30s, and he said to me, "You know, if you had asked something about how many men have viewed pornography here, every man under the age of 40's hand would have gone up." I don't know that I've had any experience to prove otherwise to me. This is a huge issue. In fact, it's, in my opinion, it's one of the issues of our day. 12% of all internet websites are pornographic. Every second, $3,000 is spent on pornography, and over 28,000 internet users are viewing it. That's every second. 25% of all search engine requests are pornography related. 1 in 4. 35% of all internet downloads are pornographic. 40 million Americans are regular visitors to pornographic sites. 70% of men aged 18 to 24 visit porn sites in a typical month. 20% of men admit to watching it online at work. Anybody want to take a guess the day that it's the viewing's the lowest? What day of the year is the viewing of pornography the lowest? Somebody said Christmas. It's not Christmas. It's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving. You got food, you've got the parade, and you got football, I guess. So what day is the most common day, the heaviest traffic day for pornography? It's Sunday. It's so accessible. It's so enticing, it is so addicting, and it is so prevalent, even among us. And I don't know how much it's been addressed here. Maybe you feel like you've heard enough about it already. One of the odd things about pornography is that it allows a man to feel like a man without being a man. You know, part of being a man is loving your wife and having a relationship where sex is about giving as well as getting. And there is a aspect there that disappears when pornography is being viewed. Proverbs 6:26 says, "By means of a harlot," by means of a prostitute, "a man is reduced to a crust of bread." Now, what do you do with a crust of bread? You eat it. "And an adulteress will prey upon his precious life." While the man is looking at this stuff and he's having all these thoughts going through his head, I think it's good for a man to remember that he's being feasted upon by a pictographic prostitute. She is having her way with you. She doesn't care the least bit about you. She doesn't know you. In fact, she probably would hate you if she knew what you were doing. And she is having her way with you. One porn actress said, "I did it for the lust of power and the love of money." And of course, she meant power over you and your money. I would ask a young man to consider, or an older man, do you care about these women? Force yourself to remember that this is a real woman. What do you know about her? We know this. 36 porn stars that we know of died from HIV, suicide, homicide, and drugs between 2007 and 2010. 36 of them. The average life expectancy of a porn performer is 37.43 years. The average life expectancy of an American is 78 years. It halves your life. They hate what they're doing. One woman said, some women hate it so much, you can hear them vomiting in the bathroom between scenes. One woman said, we hate every minute of it. We're traumatized little girls living on antidepressants, drugs, and alcohol, acting out our pain in front of you who continue to abuse us. Even in the softcore pornography world, one young woman states, quote, I experienced everything from date rape to physical abuse. What practical measures can be taken to, what's Proverbs say? The prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. So what realistic measures can be taken in the home and in my life? And you know, I'm kind of being open here. Let's be real. What measures can be taken in our lives, men, so that we don't have to face this temptation as frequently? What about internet filters? Anybody have any experience with those? You can get a free one online. It's called K9. Check it out. I've not been super impressed so far with its performance, but maybe the filter can be upped and we can get a better result. But there are a number of them out there. What else can be done? Dan? I did not know that. That's news to me. I like everything you said, and that part about, you know, the darkness hates the light, and there is something about an open door, having something out in the open. I was at Brian and Tammy Schreck's house a number of years ago, and they still had both of their girls in the home. And all the children in the home, and they had put the computer in the armoire right out in the living room. So if you were using it, you were right there around the family. We did that for quite a while at our previous home as well. I think there's something to be said for that. Now I realize, you know, you can't do that when you're working necessarily if you've got work to do from home, but that's one way of minimizing it. I like that. Any other hints? How many marriages, you know, somebody once said that the greatest secret of the church is hurting families. I believe that. I've got enough experience to make me believe that. And this is one of the things that makes families hurt. He's been doing it. She comes across something on the computer. Maybe he finally fesses up, whatever it might be, and it creates a great deal of heartache. It's a strain on marriages in a big way, and it can be avoided if we want to. Well, Paul said flee, but let's pursue a little bit before we have to close. Pursue. Spend more time with your spouse. Build the meaningful relationship that will leave no room for another. How much time are you spending together? Familiarity doesn't have to breed contempt. How much time are you spending with each other? Find a hobby to do together. You guys all know, most of you, I think, Dan and Robin Huff. Well, before they were Dan and Robin Huff, Robin Parks wanted Dan Huff to know that she had an interest in him. And we would get together regularly every Friday night for a Bible study, and then we'd play games and so forth after it, board games or whatever. Well, There was a game that Dan was very fond of called Acquire. If you haven't played it, you're missing out. It's a fun game. Anyway, Robin did not care for this game at all. Well, finally, one Friday evening after the study, Robin goes, "Let's play Acquire." And, of course, she was sending a message, and she was trying to establish a rapport there. My brother Mark married a woman who likes football. I thought it was the other way around. I thought she started liking football to spend time with him, but I found it was the other way around. But they both watch football. You make the decision, but find something to do together. If you find, so in America, I think we especially have to fight this. We've got all these things drawing us in all these different directions, and we end up just living parallel lives in the same house. Find a way to make your lives intersect. Here's this thing we're gonna do together. It can be reading the Bible. It can be praying together, but find something to do together. Spend time in the Word. Take your thoughts captive. Change your places of recreation, which we've already talked about. Follow the Mark 9 rule. Remember what Jesus said, if your eye causes you to sin, what? Pluck it out. If your hand causes you to sin, what? Cut it off. In other words, he's saying, do whatever it takes. Take extreme measures to make it happen. Pursue a godly sexual relationship with your spouse. And I didn't know how mixed our company would be tonight, so I want to be careful how much I say here, but I think this is an important part of the package. It doesn't sound very romantic, but it's biblical, and that is that one of the reasons for marriage is the sexual relationship. Were it not for the sexual relationship, you could have everything that comes with marriage without marriage. But God has said that there's this one thing you cannot have outside of marriage. 1 Corinthians 7:2, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. So there's this relationship that God has said can only happen in marriage, and your body is not your own now, it is your spouse's. That relationship has to be cultivated. It does take work like everything else, and some of you have much, much more experience than I do. Women are stimulated by touch, attitudes, actions, words, are person-centered. Men tend to be body-centered, and men need to remember that if they want their wife's interest, it's really about everything they do in every other room but the bedroom that matters. One woman said, a husband that does the dishes and vacuums the floor increases his chances of an encounter by 80%. You got to figure out what works for your family. And of course, you mustn't do things just to get. It needs to be an expression of love. Obvious, but maybe it does need to be said. A woman needs to feel attached emotionally before she has the desire to feel connected physically. We must learn to be patient with each other. We must learn to understand one another. It is possible, husbands, for our wives not to have an interest, even though they very much are interested and attracted in us. One woman said, it's as if I were full and someone placed my favorite dish in front of me. I'm simply too full to partake. I've been dealing with children all day. I'm touched out. I love you, honey, but not now. And we've all got to learn not to be insulted by things like that if you have a tendency to be that way. For her, it's an encounter. It's not an encounter as much as it is an experience. And men need to be appreciative of that. But whatever the case, the scripture does say, you give yourself to that person, knowing that your body is no longer your own. All of that, of course, tempered by treating others as you want to be treated. She wants you to share with her in life. She's not looking for someone who will bring home the bacon but live only a parallel life in the same walls. She needs her desires and dreams to become your desires and dreams. One woman wrote the following, when we connect heart to heart, I desire to be connected body to body. It takes work. The whole marriage experience takes work. I had an older couple tell me one time, she told me, they'd been married for years, so they were doing something right. But one or both of them said, we've never had an argument. And you think to yourself, really? Are you sure you're remembering right? Maybe your marriage is like that. If that's the case, I'd like to know how you manage that. Because when different people, opposites attract, and you have different points of view, but you have to work it out. Any comments or questions? We're kind of jumping all around, but do you have anything, Gerald? I appreciate that, and I hope everyone was able to hear that. I mean, if the focus on the Lord is shared, a lot of this stuff's just going to iron itself out, and a lot of things we're talking about just kind of happen because your focus is on the Lord, and it looks like our time is up. I appreciate your attention, and we will turn our attention to child rearing next week, God permitting.